this crazed debt world, this crazy system, this so-called economy, still existing, resistant to change, has managed to program and condition and blight our responses and our thinking processes for 300 years is incredible.
The year 1694 Legislative Act was a beginning. It enshrined a medium of exchange, a debt-derived finance, that once used, places the borrower, the global population, in unrepayable debt forever. Debt is the cause. Eternal indebtedness is the effect. It results in the unspeakable global atrocities of exploitation in the name of profit.
Have we entirely missed the point? The arbitrarily installed 300-year-old legislated debt system, protected by the octupled arms of the law, it demands the impossible, repayment of debt with debt. It demands, regardless of the toxic result, resource exploitation by our profit-riven economy. Should we not be closely looking at that cause that leaves the majority of the world population in varying degrees of poverty, misery, and rebellion?
The global problem is neither greed nor ignorance. These responses are but effects within a world suffering the mind-numbing brainwashing of financial debt that brings scarcity of access to goods and services. A confused world struggling to repay debt by borrowing.
This crazed debt world, this crazy system, this so-called economy.
Our inability to heed and act on science's many models and surveys, reports and recommendations is the unintended outcome of one hasty piece of antique legislation.
The scarcity, due to the cost of borrowing finance, restricts financial access to goods, services and wages, and curtails our third world population's ability to provide abundantly and sustainably for themselves. They suffer the deprivation, we do the consuming.
Since the beginning of technological industrialization, debt has spawned a culture of exploitation. Money created as debt is destitute of any moral or ethical quality, and is just so counterproductive, so destructive, it almost defies reason that the causal role played by it remains ignored, remains ignored, remains ignored, remains ignored, remains ignored.
Hi, you're listening to Kaput Radio. I'm Martin, and I present an instructive talk about the global debt system.
Unentitled. The focus of this short talk is centered on why and how we came to be existing in a world in conflict, and how and why we have developed this competitive rather than cooperative global culture. The how part deals with the cause, and the why deals with the effect, as in the statement, conflict and effect is forced upon us by our global debt system, the cause. An unfortunate situation for a caring, nurturing and naturally cooperative species to have thrust upon them. I hesitate to call this self-imposed debt system either financial or monetary, as those terms raise a false impression of wealth. It does seem a little odd, then, that en masse we've succumbed to gratefully grasping at opportunities to acquire debt, either nationally or individually, but only at a low interest rates, of course. On how our lives, from cradle to grave, have been reduced to an oppressive culture of competitive struggle, where we revel in that rivalry right through our education, our sports and games, our science, our industries and our commercial activities. And isn't our religion, if we have one, whichever one it is, better than those other religions? But globally, our entrenched system of creating a debit currency has so much power that it asserts an absolute cultural authority far greater than any conventional religion, past or present, ever has. Apart from describing the cause of, and our fear of, that imminent environmental threat posed by our alleged wicked human activity, this talk also outlines a most practical and rational solution to our constant recycling of debt, destruction, and disaster society. Securing our living through ongoing environmental and social economic exploitation ensures that we compete and conflict, not only with each other, but also with Mother Nature. Input is welcome.
But surely people's self-interest drives the economy.
However, let's first briefly begin the process of fleshing out,
to our population's by now fully formed cynicism, the onerous task of relating how a world would look minus the enforced financial imperatives that give rise to our present attitudes, our behaviour, and our world view.
But there always was the selection of the strong over the weak.
Okay, so this new world would not have to be brave. It would no longer have a world population in competition, but in cooperation, and no longer handicapped by cynicism. And where the competitive, combative instinct previously used as an economic survival technique has become redundant. And if by any chance you just happen to believe my belief that we as a mammalian species are both protective and nurturing, and that we would choose cooperation over competition if given the option, then this futuristic vision may not seem to you as quite so unattainable. But, as yet, a difficulty remains in justifying our moral position on those primitive, hindbrain, reptilian responses required for economic success. To respond this way was probably legitimate pre our present technological age, but only remains rational today because of the set of rules accompanying an irrational debt currency. The ever-pressing need for the financial means of access to goods and services controls our every economic activity. For commercial survival under this arbitrarily installed system, the rules for the use of debt must be obeyed to the letter. It is these rules that demand growth of profit and our exploitive global activity that we rail against and loudly deplore. Its rules are destructive of both our social and physical environments. Yet they must apply. The number one rule says, profit or perish, and the buck stops there. Okay, we must have profit. Profit we understand, but the reason for this imperative seems beyond our collective, comprehensive capabilities. Human survival, post our hunter-gatherer period, right up to the beginning of the Industrial Revolution, depended, for the most part, on lots of hard labour by lots of people with competitive and competitive skills that are not only redundant today, but counterproductive. The incredible absurdity of our debt system becomes abundantly clear when, for economic survival today, amid potential abundance, the same debilitating values of exploitation, competitive greed, and cutthroat business practices are implicit. Such inappropriate behaviour can only seem rational looking from within the dictates of our debt system. That this crazed debt world, this crazy system, this so-called economy, still existing, resistant to change, has managed to program and condition and blight our responses and our thinking processes for 300 years is incredible. However, since the beginning of the Industrial Revolution, these pre-programmed responses would and should have gradually become irrelevant and redundant, but for that arbitrarily introduced, highly toxic piece of debt legislation, they may well have been. Primitive productive methods of former times meant constant arduous toil. Many hands were needed for most tasks. Living then was difficult, a harder and shorter and at times dangerous. It truly was a battle for existence.
Hasn't competition been good for getting us to where we are today?
Well, it certainly has, but have a little peek at where we are today. Is this where we want to be? It has got us into more than an environmental and social dilemma. It has us blaming each other and any number of other effects and symptoms such as consumerism, growth, profit expansion, greed and exploitation. The debt system has blinded us to the evidence of a reality that these issues are but consequences resulting from a removable, replaceable basic cause. Its incidents immediately engaged a self-preservation instinctive mode of survival through competition, beating others to a scarce and elusive but oh-so-necessary product known as money. Cause and effect, used in this context, seems to be an entirely incomprehensible concept to a lot of people. The year 1694 Legislated Act was a beginning and enshrined a medium of exchange, a debt-derived finance, and that, once used, places the borrower, the global population, in an unrepayable debt forever and a day. Debt is the cause. Eternal indebtedness is the effect. It results in the unspeakable global atrocities of exploitation in the name of profit. Want to find the hidden motive for any of the aforementioned atrocious effects? Look for the profit and follow that back to its legislated causal factor. But to a population saddled with his hardwired perception of dependence on our competitive skills and competitive abilities, as we are, the description of a civilization at peace that thrives on cooperation certainly might seem like a fantasy world created by a writer of fairy tales. With fully sustainable, automated production methods waiting in the wings to be deployed for our benefit, combative skills and abilities are still implied and encouraged from infancy. They act as a response conditioning necessary for career success. However, on a rational basis, in a sane civilization, using a sane finance system, these qualities would no longer apply. Ours is the age, the era, that requires cooperation, not just within cliques, teams, groups, or the nation, but on a global scale. Luckily, this quality is also another instinctive quality within our species, as shown by studies conducted with children and adults, and would quickly be readily adopted by the general population. Apart from the irrational overarching law of indebtedness, resulting in an artificial scarcity under which crawling, cooped, we live and die, there lives no reason for conflict and exploitation. No reason for irrationality to reign supreme. No rational requirement for our economy to take precedence over environmental and social issues as it does and must do in order to make all that important yet so scarce profit.
Surely profit is important. Without it, we go bankrupt.
Oh, this is quite true within our present system. But the problem is not actually profit per se. It's the type of profit. It's the profit that's made from debt. Someone else's debt. The scarcity, due to the cost of borrowing finance, restricts financial access to goods, services, and wages, and curtails our third world's population's ability to provide abundantly and sustainably for themselves. Because export is so crucial to our economy, we've restricted the third world's share of that market, without which their domestic market cannot grow. So they're even deprived of the finance required for production and their own sustainable domestic market. They suffer the deprivation, we do the consuming. Our potential to adequately provide is evidenced today by today's technology and innovation. The science of ecological protectionism has been researched for decades, but it lacks economic viability, so cannot be fully implemented. This alone should make it clear to the public that an overlooked, unrecognized, but crucial factor is at work, one that we've been ignoring to the great disadvantage of the ecosystem and just about every other natural system. Have we entirely missed the point that it's the arbitrarily installed 300-year-old legislated debt system protected by the octuple arms of the law? It demands the impossible repayment of debt with debt. It demands, regardless of the toxic result, resource exploitation by our profit-driven economy. Should we not be looking closely at that cause? Whatever and wherever it is that leaves the majority of the world population in varying degrees of poverty, misery, and rebelliousness, most of it dire, and makes impossible any move towards a humanitarian outcome. We could perhaps start by replacing our ineffective pointing the finger of blame at others and the demanding of impossible forms, while under the law of the financial debt that's behind it all. We could replace defiant protest, dissent, conflict, and indignant blaming of others with an effective, mature, and enlightened line of intellectual inquiry into that causative factor. Among the general population, a basic understanding of the crux of the problem would, I think, see that basic method overturned, our system of debt creation removed and replaced, would allow a rational, sustainable economy to emerge. Courtesy of a sane system of credit finance creation by government. Intelligent, sustainable ecologies, environments, and economies are presently impossible. Not the 100th monkey, but perhaps when the 100,000th or even millionth human gains an intellectual grasp of their fundamental problem, it may initiate enough democratic awareness for the rest of us to realise the need for change. Let's keep our collective fingers and toes crossed on that one.
How can the system of debt be the sole cause of our problems?
The global problem is neither greed nor ignorance. These responses are but effects within a world of suffering, the mind-numbing brainwashing of financial debt that brings scarcity of access to goods and services. A confused world struggling to repay debt by borrowing. Come on. The destructive consequence stemming from our so-called greedy, ignorant human activity has been researched, published, and rebroadcast in all possible media ad nauseam for over half a century, since at least the silent spring time of 1952. Every one of us, in or out of industry, in or out of government, are or have been made aware to some degree of the results of what we do and how we do it. In other words, our human activity. Discontented, malcontented, and disaffected folk hold protest meetings, constantly reiterating to the point of boring stark social and environmental home truths. We blockade, wherever possible, these profit-motivated and what isn't industrial abuses of nature. Our inability to heed and act on science's many models and surveys, reports and recommendations is the intended outcome of one hasty piece of antique legislation. Surely, if an organic-type computer in the form of a brain had projected the outcome of that parliamentary act, where science's recommendations are not profitable or where they impact unfavourably on an established industry, they are just not doable. No matter how toxic, an established industry cannot be shut down just like that. The whole economy would collapse. Switching takes time and planning to avoid profit loss, which brings sudden financial death. Since the beginning of technological industrialism, debt has spawned a culture of exploitation. Money created as debt is destitute of any moral or ethical quality, and is just so counterproductive, so destructive, that it almost defies reason that the causal role played by it remains ignored. Let's hope it's just unrecognised, which is perhaps the more charitable view. It is a generally accepted truth that behind every effect there is a cause, and if we follow the trail to its starting point, we shall observe the principle from which it sprang. That causal factor of debt-created money must be eliminated before a civil society can even be imagined. At the moment, that ridiculous imperative of economic growth and exploitation must be obeyed before profit can be achieved. Costly finance, to be serviced with more debt money, is our economic stumbling block to a truly sustainable world economy and a sustainable, cohesive and peaceful world population. The rule of debt produces scarcity in the form of a chronic sense of lack. Ever-rising costs of debt finance require ever greater profits made from a pool of debt. We must compete with and exploit and treat the environment as a rival and wrestle with the impossible task of repaying debt with yet more debt. Well, may we shout our protests, publish and wave our science reports and environmental impact studies in front of the corporate wrongdoers who know the effects from their own studies and also know that our immediate economic survival depends on short-term planning and exploitation. Long-term planning is out of the question under this rule of debt. Such is our present reality. A paper in the recent Bank of England's quarterly bulletin spells out clearly that money is borrowed into existence. Also made clear by an article in the Economic Reform Australia Review is that teacher resource material on economic subjects in most schools are completely inaccurate on the how and where of finance. Teaching this misinformation is not only dangerous for the student, but also the teacher. They both live, then, in a la-la land, mythology, creating an intellectually paralysed global population and remain impervious to the actuality of their situation. A bank in the debt system, like any business, pays for its own costs and its shareholder dividends from its income, which is its profit from fees, charges and interest returns. As, for example, when a client with a suitable income wants a new car or house, the bank virtually pays for it, owns it till the client buys it from them under contract and pays costs. Profit must be made and must be seen to be made right now. This is the rule, the law that we live under and obey right now.
What about using people's bank deposits as a borrowing source?
The vast amount of so-called bank deposits consist of the sum people have just borrowed. The borrowed sum goes into an account in the borrower's name. In banking terms, loans become deposits. Even the Bank of England declares this in their quarterly bulletin. From 1694 to now, our global means of exchange has been borrowed on the perceived value of an asset that is held by the bank till the loan and the costs involved, including interest, are paid to the bank. After that, the asset again becomes the property of the borrower. But this has caused the value of the asset to decrease, because its value is now diminished in relation to the total sum borrowed. That is, the cost of the borrowing. That is, the cost of the debt incurred. Environmental scientists are appalled at how most of our global private and government industries treat our natural environment. In the humanities, most of our thinkers and academics, along with a large proportion of the global population, are revolted at how we exploit our fellow humans, but are unconcerned about or ignorant of the reason behind such behaviour. They therefore make misguided assumptions about human nature, assumptions which only perpetuate the status quo. These feelings of repulsion among so many of us indicate that we yet may harbour enough residual redeeming features that may yet force replacement of the debt system and support a monetary system. An actually civil society is only achievable in a future rational system of monetary creation as opposed to our irrational system of debt creation. Okay, let's look at a cooperative world as an alternative. If we remove the imperative for conflict among us, are we to believe that humans would continue to kill, maim, and torture and exploit? Is this really our preferred human nature? Is this the highest level to which we can aspire? At the very least, do not a few of us dream of a compassionate, rational, and sane global society? But with the profit imperative demanding conflict instead, we must strive to be better than those others, seen as rivals, and beat them to that ever-scarce debt. This means have more income than, more and better things than, which shows that we are smarter than, and a better competitor than, others. The criteria of our worth are judged and punctuated by our profit gains in whatever industry we are in. That industrial revolution of several hundred years ago was such a wasted opportunity of a misused, misunderstood boon to humanity. It brought to the world population a hitherto unimaginable capability, a potential to create our world anew. Because of debt, we've ended up with a frenzied race to the bottom of the empty economic barrel, where there is not enough for everybody. We're scraping the bottom of the oceans, scraping the timber off the hills and out of the forests, and sucking subterranean energy to repay debt. Imagine that emerging revolutionary industrial world. The technical capabilities and ingenuity was there. The resources were there. the willing workers were there, and importantly, the requirements for that better world that they sought was there in abundance. The possibility of a humane world was enormous, but under the burden of the rule of debt and its profit requirement, that longed-for new world had as much chance then as was a flight to the moon in a steam engine. We are, after all, supposedly a rational species, at times thought of as Homo sapiens, the wise ones, striving to exist under a seldom-considered, forgotten-by-most, man-made financial law, a flaw instigated in the dim, distant past. A critic could be forgiven for thinking that it's not only the past that's dim here.
Didn't the Industrial Revolution provide great benefits for humanity?
Oh, that pre-industrial world of low-yield, labour-intensive production and subsistence-level poverty for the major part of our planet's inhabitants was about to be, or could have become, a thing of the past. Yet with the debt method, that much-needed funding is forever in short supply, meaning there must always be less funding in local circulation to meet the price of the produce on sale. The frantic contest for and the armed and forceful preservation of our export market share is testament to the absolute power and tyranny of debt. Nothing must stay in the way of or be allowed to hinder profit growth, or you are financially dead. There are no alternatives to and no escape under the rule of profit first. Profit before any other consideration. Profit before the well-being of humanity. Profit before the health of the environment. While ever we are under the rule of this debt regime, these so alien designs are for our economic survival. Our law says debt must be repaid. This debt economy was accepted with open arms that were extended by minds that were focused elsewhere. Sadly, the only purchasing power now in circulation in the domestic marketplace are the borrowed wage salary and dividend incomes. This has resulted in a world of poverty because local wages can't cover the cost of borrowing them, making export sales necessary, which require the sale of extra production. Vast amounts of export gives the domestic market just enough income, purchase power, for us to consume a small percentage of our production. So that we can afford to consume 5% of our production, we must find export market sales for the other 95%. No exporting, no consuming, as in a depression. But competition, which is synonymous with conflict, is today still necessary for short-term economic survival. On a global economic level, all interests are the same. That is, the securing of enough profit to give us some access to the produce and the services of our technological age of abundance. While ever we use debt as a means of exchange, the larger percentage of our global population has no or minimal access. Meanwhile, profits of our local Western industries grow and expand, and we get to afford to consume by using the third world poor as cheap labour, making our goods for us, and using their factories as desirable focus point for worldwide export of competitively priced goods.
Aren't the so-called cheap labour countries held back in their development by corruption?
Meanwhile, globally, 30,000 children die daily of poverty-related causes, and globally, billions of us live well below the poverty line. The popular assumption is that those who live in Western developed nations have plenty of money, don't they? They don't have to compete for funds or jobs, do they? And their governments and local councils can adequately fund road maintenance, transport facilities, hospitals, childcare, aged care, education at all levels and the arts, etc., can't they? Some of us fondly imagine there exists no scarcity of funds, only faulty distribution and people with selfish priorities causing conflict over funding shortages. And contrary to popular belief, there are researchers who propose that there exists no scarcity of any other planetary resource if it were to be sourced and used sustainably. Is it so hard to imagine a world well stocked with natural resources that are necessarily on hold, waiting for a more rational, fairer society to enjoy them? Our mismanaged, threatened ecology and its environment may yet respond to a carefully managed, sane economic system run by a system of finance that presents our skills and our capabilities instead of debt, scarcity and poverty.
Bereft of our deeply and globally entrenched belief in the value of our competitiveness and the need for our finely developed skills in exploitation, would we not begin to realise the benefit of global cooperation? We now champion global rivalry, conflict and competition. Is this really the world we want? Within the present system, teamwork is only ever fostered because it gives the team a competitive edge over the opposition's team. If a member of a team were to cooperate with the opposition, they would be punished as a traitor. If we remove the profit requirement that demands we must fight wars for the right to exploit and access each other's resources, and replace it with a rational method, are we suddenly disoriented? What would be the goal of society and industry if the borrowing of debt is replaced by money that is earned into existence by the production of goods and services? Money earned into existence would be via the government's constitutional power to create its own money for its own expenditure, thus putting prosperity, instead of the burden of debt, into circulation. Benjamin Franklin did this by creating colonial scrip in the then 13 highly successful colonies of what was to become the United States of America. Money thus created stays in the community. It is not a debt. It isn't borrowed, so doesn't have to be repaid. It represents a good or a service. Real wealth. Would our educational systems be teaching cooperation, using cooperation as a teaching tool? There are studies and research that suggest this would be a great benefit to students and to society in general. Such an approach has been suggested and tried in some schools recently, but rejected by others, probably vetoed on accurate and logical claims of it not adequately fitting students to meet the highly competitive, dog-eat-dog world of commerce. But we are trying to envisage a world that has moved on to a new era, a new understanding of finance, of each other, and of what has gone wrong, where the restraints and constrictions caused by an artificial scarcity and its requirement to contest for as much profit as possible have been removed. Our moralists, ethicists, public philosophers, prophets, and intellectuals would probably have a field day, perchance they had the wit to comprehend the possibilities arising from a rational monetary system instead of. What price our present self-perpetuating debt system, with accelerating growth, expansion, and profit without entropy? Yay?
Thank you for your interest. You heard a talk written by Graham and performed by Len and Tanya. Thank you all for your support. If you like to email me, feel free to use the Contact Producer button, which you can find on the program page for this show at radiofigure4all.net. I'm Martin, and you can catch me again with more Kaput Radio next time.